Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
So I don't know if you, I did want to mention this though real quick. We're going to talk to Brandon Johnson after 1 o'clock. He's running for mayor. Everybody's got a poll out and everybody's poll says that they are in first place or second place, that they are doing really well. Vallis and Johnson and Lightfoot and Sawyer and Garcia and the rest of them. But there is a poll of the polls. If you average them, as Frank Calabrese did here, he says, here's what you get. Garcia, 21%, Lightfoot, 18.3%, Vallis, 18.4%, which sounds about right. One of the polls out there by one of her opponents shows Lori Lightfoot at about 9%, but that sounds low and 25% sounds high. 21% Garcia, 18.3% Lightfoot, 18.4% Vallis. Brandon Johnson at almost 9% and Willie Wilson at 10.5%. Now, we'll talk to Brandon Johnson in a little bit. Here on WGN Radio, I'm John Williams. This is Daniel Linna, who is a senior lecturer and the director of Law and Technology Initiatives at Northwestern University. Daniel, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. How are you?
Doing very well. Nice to join you.
So just tell me a little bit about what you do and how able you were to anticipate this latest sort of iteration of AI. What's your background?
Yeah, well, my background is that before I joined academia, I was practicing law, lawyer in a law firm. I was an equity partner in a large law firm. Before that, I worked in technology. So I've been following the developments in this space for a while now and really focused on it here at Northwestern, working closely with my colleagues in computer science. And this was a little bit surprising, the way that this was rolled out and the broad accessibility of it. Actually, the underlying technology has been around for a while, and it was really more the packaging of it and the way it was made so accessible for so many that it's really driving all the hoopla around this.
Some of us have actually had trouble accessing it. It is suddenly so hot right now. I clicked on and it said, we're sorry, but we can't get you in right now, just to try it out. But what are we even talking about? Explain to us what ChatGPT would be.
Well, it's a chatbot, and people are able to interact with it, ask questions. And this is one of the things that's been so exciting for many people is the ability to give it a prompt, ask it something like, to write an essay about a topic. And because of the large body of language that it's been trained on, it's really good at generating prose that is believable. The underlying way that it works is something that we've experienced quite a bit. If you use like Gmail or different things on your iPhone, perhaps, where it predicts the next word, if you've seen that sort of technology,
yeah.
It's really that sort of technology on steroids then that can produce paragraphs and full essays.
So it's different than Google or Ask Jeeves or something like that. Rather than just searching a fact for you or a source, it's generating content. Is that right?
Yeah, and there's a couple important distinctions there. I mean, with a search engine, there's really a human in the loop, in the process. You Google something, you get a number of hits. As humans, we go through it, we can kind of filter through what seems relevant and, oh, number two, number three, that's really what I'm looking for. So here, that's cut out and you just get a result. And there really is no connection to fact here, right? It's been trained on a lot of different words, but you're thinking about predicting words. It's just statistically predicting what words ought to come next. And oftentimes it can produce things that are not connected to facts at all, or that are completely made up, or even hallucinations is what some of them calling them.
Or inaccurate results. But If I ask it to do something, write a paragraph about WGN Radio, would it then just cut and paste something somebody previously said about our radio station? Or would it take the vast, store of knowledge about WGN and create an original document?
It doesn't cut and paste, or usually not, at least. There are some instances where people have seen where it'll output things that look like it was a cut and paste from somewhere. But from a statistical perspective, it's predicting what is the most likely text that would make sense in response to a prompt. My colleague Chris Hammond gave an example where he asked it about our Master of Science in Artificial Intelligence program. And it got a lot of things right about what the program was about. But then when it talked about the duration, it talked about it being, ChatGPT said it was a two-year program, when in fact it's a 15-month program. But most programs like that are a two-year program. So that's like a nice example of it giving you what is kind of like the average or most likely answer generally, but that's not connected to the actual facts on the ground.
Still, it is fascinating. I mean, you make it sound logical, but boy, the computing and crunching that must be going on. Let's go back to my example. Write a paragraph about WGN Radio, and then it, what, goes to the internet and searches out WGN Radio. And then there's a million things about us and people we've talked to and hosts that we've had and the history of radio. How does it even know what the which direction to go, what the next sentence is, for crying out loud?
Well, interestingly enough, it's not actually connected to the internet, and it's been trained on data gathered from the internet through 2021. So there's a lot of information that it doesn't even know, right? So it's outdated in some sense. So it's not really connected with facts in that way. It's really actually making predictions about what text is most likely to come next to put together something coherent.
Right. But there's nothing that's WGN Radio is. What? A radio station? Period. Mm-hmm. Now what's it going to say? I mean, it's such a broad topic. It's amazing to me that it would be able to hone in on anything sensible or usable.
Well, you think about WGN as an example, right? There is a lot of content out there. People have written articles about it. There's a lot on your website. So there is a lot of data that was likely in that training corpus. When they train the system, that it could pick up on some things and make some predictions about what words might make sense and what kind of things you might say about WGN Radio.
That's just so interesting. Predictions. You keep using that word as though after WGN, I'm going to predict that this would be the most logical next word or phrase. Which, if that's what it does, okay, fair enough. How about this? If you said, write a history of WGN in a paragraph, and I gave it the exact same command on a different machine the next day, would we both get the exact same result, or would we get different results?
We would almost certainly get different results. And this is one of the very interesting things about it, is some of the examples you see on social media, there's a lot of prompt engineering that goes into this. So in other words, specifically how you ask the question and what information you give has a huge impact on the results you get. And then it is variable. You're not going to get the same thing to the same prompt each time. Now, in the prediction part, just quickly, I heard an example on a podcast I was listening to this morning where they were talking about, like, if I say a sentence, the cat chased the, you know, what word would you say would you predict follows that?
Mouse.
Mouse, right? That's what most people would say. But maybe it's laser pointer, right? Or maybe it's some other thing. So there's a lot of things where in language you could kind of predict things, and if you string things together like that, there's more sophistication to it, right? In the training of this and piecing it together. There was also, it's not just machines, they use human reinforcement learning for some fine tuning and training of these systems. There is a context for this that I think that is really important. This has gotten a lot of attention. But there's a lot of other AI approaches. A lot of the work that I'm doing with my colleagues here at Northwestern is thinking about how we can use computational tools to expand access to the law and legal information, legal guidance, expand access to justice. So we're really excited about these suites of tools. There are shortcomings ChatGPT has, but there's other technology tools that are being developed in this space that will work with tools like ChatGPT to create even more, far more powerful systems in the future.
Yeah, well, you're getting to what I want to talk about. Let's pause for just a minute, and that is, how do we use it? Should kids use it in school? What does access to justice mean? Am I going to ask it to defend me from a DUI and then tell me what to say? What are the uses of this technology, and what are the perils of it? Daniel Lin is a senior lecturer. He's the director of Law and Technology Initiatives at Northwestern University, a guy from the tech side, but also the legal side, which is perfect to talk about ChatGPT, this new version of artificial intelligence, which is maybe driving a lot of business and a lot of conversation these days. Before we talk about the applications, though, Daniel, do you suppose Google will have a version of this, Meta will have a version of this, Will one be better than another? I wonder if I'll find one brand of chat that I will think is more helpful than another.
Yeah, well, Google and Meta already have versions of this. I mean, this is based on large language model. And even there's been a little bit of sniping around among some of the experts about people's, you know, at Google and Facebook saying, we did this first and we already have this technology, but we've been more responsible about the ways in which we're deploying it. So, you know, I do think there's some interesting things that OpenAI has done here as far as creating some guardrails and addressing some problems that have cropped up with large language models in the past about some of the bias in the systems or some of the things that they might say that we wouldn't want a system like this to say, you know, assisting maybe people in doing illegal activities, for example. But yes, there are going to be a lot of different companies that will have their own versions of these, and more of them will get fine-tuned on very specific use cases and problems, such as in the legal space, focusing on, say, landlord-tenant matters, for example. So we'll have a lot of versions of these tools.
One more question about this, though. How do I use it? Is it an app on my phone? Is it a site? Do I go to openai.com and then there'll be a search bar and I can type in my request? How does it function?
Yeah, most people are accessing this now on the internet, on a website, right? And so there's a dialogue, a prompt box where you can put in your question. There's been a ton of innovation already around this where people have been creating apps for your phone and add-ins for your email and stuff to make it easier to send prompts to ChatGPT and get the output back. So there's a lot of innovation around it to make it easy to access that engine.
Google seems to be satisfactory for us, or Wikipedia say. What is the principal use then? How are people or will businesses use this?
Well, there's a lot of talk about Microsoft making a huge investment. They've already invested in OpenAI, but another $10 billion. And they're saying they want to add these tools to Microsoft Word, to Outlook, and to help people be able to draft memos, letters, research papers, emails. I think that's an area where there is absolutely a tremendous use case. And, you know, just helping us write things, particularly if we're writing things where it tends to be more or less the same content over and over again. And how can these tools help us improve the clarity and maybe mix up the messaging a little bit so that people feel like it's actually personalized for them, things like that.
What would an example of that be? I have my own guess, but you tell me.
Well, and what if you're in the marketing department of a company and you know, you're just sending out emails to past customers about new products? Perhaps you would have an assistive tool like this that would be able to take in certain information about each individual and take that information into consideration. You know, maybe it's even asking questions about their kids and things like that to really write to help you write an initial draft of what would feel like a very personalized letter. And then the personalization would come with the human kind of after the initial draft comes out, adding on top of that. And so I think we see a lot of use cases like that, including in the legal space where, you know, there could be tools like this that would help create initial drafts of different types of documents, and then the human lawyer or the end user who might be using this in a legal situation, sending a demand letter to a landlord, for example, would then kind of fine tune it after they get the first draft.
So wait a minute, I'm a tenant and I'm upset that the landlord didn't fix the problem we've got in our apartment. What am I going to go to this tool, type in my problem or give it a prompt, and then it's going to write a letter to my landlord and it'll maybe give me some legal footing that I'm not familiar with? Am I reaching too far here?
No, I think that's exactly the direction. Now, I think ChatGPT itself, there's been some talk about like, well, maybe just this tool can give the advice. And I don't think that's actually the way we'll use large language models in this workflow. Some of the work I'm doing with the Lawyers Committee for Better Housing here in Chicago, they have a chatbot, Rent Prevention. Now, the majority of that chatbot is actually rules-driven. You know, we've mapped out what the law is. We ask the person who's having a problem with the landlord to give us some information about the location, the number of units in the building, the dates, right? So we know the time setting. And then you can guide them to an answer. It might be an answer is that, well, wait, you're complaining your security deposit hasn't been returned yet. You actually haven't waited long enough, right? The landlord has 2 more weeks to return it. Or, no, it should have been returned last week. You haven't heard anything. let me help you here draft the letter. I think many of these letters are probably a lot more formulaic, but there might be circumstances where a chatbot like this could be helpful in tailoring it in the right way and adding the kind of context that could make the letter more effective and make it clear that it's not just a cookie-cutter form that 100,000 other people in Chicago have used.
We're talking to Daniel Linna from Northwestern University about ChatGPT. How is this technology going to be different than the experience we already have, which is something like this? I've got a problem with my cable or my phone or an appliance, and then I call the help number, and it says, hey, I'm here to help. Hit 1 for account, 2 for billing, 3 for service, 4 for technology, and you're going, I just want to talk to a human being, and none of these prompts are the one I want, so I'm going to try 3, and now I'm in the 3 rabbit hole, but it's not really helping me. And it'll say, well, if you have a service problem, reboot, unplug it. And I go, no, that's not the thing. I already did it, but I'm in this stupid loop, and there's no human interaction. I'm just listening to recordings that thinks that it knows what I want, and it doesn't. And now I'm already mad at you. How about that?
That's a perfect example, because this is the fear with many of these technologies. And when you have a rules system like that, that's the inflexibility. It's brittle, and we don't really know what the person wants. They have to spend 5 minutes going through prompts, and they don't get to where they need to be. The Rentervention chatbot project is a good example of that, because it starts off using a tool called Google Dialogflow, which is a large language model, and it has an open text box where you can just describe the problem that you have in open text. And then Google Dialogflow will categorize it and kind of put you down the right path to make sure that you're getting to where you need to go. And these tools will continue to get better and better. And we're doing some research on things like this. I'm working with a colleague at Purdue, Dr. Sabine Brunswicker. We've done a randomized controlled trial study of this Rentervention chatbot. And part of the idea is like, well, how can we make these systems more humanizing? How can we make a better connection with the user? How can we more quickly determine what the user actually needs and get them the information that they need? How can we develop trust through using empathic language and really understand where the user is coming from? These are some of the challenges with these tools, but there's been a lot of research on how to overcome some of those obstacles. You know, and the best companies will have kind of off ramps so that if you get into this chat bot, right, that you can very quickly get to the human who can help you if your problem isn't one of the kind that could be quickly solved through the chat bot.
Boy, I hope we still have humans. I have 30 seconds left. Allay, my concerns about students using this in high school or college.
Yeah, I think that's a tricky question. We're going to have to make some changes in education. And, you know, we need to train students how to use these tools responsibly and ask them to do things to bring their own unique individual, experience into the work that they do, the writing that they do, so that it isn't just something you can easily put a prompt in the ChatGPT and have it spit out something as the answer. I'd like to see us train students to think about how to use these tools. It's going to be built into Microsoft Word. It's already in Google Gmail. Right? Wow. These are going to augment the creativity and potential humans have. And so let's get students learning how to use them responsibly early on.
It's a fascinating area. This is the first time I've had a conversation. I feel like the Today Show when they said, what is internet? What is ChatGPT? Daniel Linna, senior lecturer at Northwestern University on law and technology stuff. Okay. Daniel, let's talk again. Thanks for your expertise today.
Sounds wonderful. Great talking with you, John. Take care.